The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
The European Union, they have resumed legal action against the UK following the publication of this bill that would overturn elements of the Northern Ireland Protocol. David O'Sullivan is a former Secretary General of the European Commission and head of the EU's Foreign Service and current Director General of the Institute of International and European Affairs. David, you're very welcome to the show. Can you just explain for us, because it's quite complicated. This isn't kind of a new legal proceedings. It's the resumption of old legal proceedings. What exactly is going on?
Well, what has basically happened is the British government has introduced legislation which would enable them completely to rewrite unilaterally the Protocol on Northern Ireland, which, as your listeners will remember, was an integral part of the withdrawal agreement when the UK left the European Union, and was designed to avoid a hard border on the island of Ireland by putting checks at the customs and ports in Northern Ireland. This has been a debate that's been going on for some time, even after the ink was barely dry before the British government sort of said, well, they didn't really like the agreement they had signed, and they have been trying to find ways to wriggle out of it. This is the most aggressive version of that we've seen, legislation which would enable them unilaterally completely to rewrite it. So understandably, the European Union is not happy and is proposing to restart the legal proceedings against the United Kingdom, which it had taken previously. But of course, that's just a first step. If the British government really were to go forward and abandon the protocol, then the European Union would have to take much more dramatic action.
Well, Ben Lowry is with us as well. Ben is the editor of the Belfast Newsletter. Ben, appreciate the time and thanks a million for chatting to us. I mean, protracted legal battle with the EU, is that the price worth paying to get rid of the protocol?
Well, I mean, it is a very difficult situation politically, and there is no easy solution to it. But I would say that, this is not just a case of the UK getting its own way. I mean, for example, we're seeing at the moment, you know, significant pressure, including we'll be reporting on tomorrow, pressure on the DUP to say that it will go back into Stormont. And remember that no one essentially now is talking about scrapping the protocol in its entirety. Not even the DUP in its rhetoric is talking about scrapping the Irish Sea border. So that's a major thing that they're probably going to accept, which is that a major difference between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. So it's not just a case of the UK government acting unilaterally and giving the DUP everything at once. I mean, there are critiques that it doesn't even come close to going far enough for unionists. But the likelihood is that the DUP will, at some point, if this bill makes satisfactory progress, go back into Stormont.
And is that the suspicion? Because there had been talk that the DUP might hold out, you know, until this had kind of progressed all the way through Parliament and all the delays that might come with it. You seem to be suggesting, well, no, listen, once the ball starts rolling, there's a suggestion the DUP might go back in.
I think that that's the thing to look out for in the coming weeks. So, for example, does the DUP, under pressure, agree to a sort of graduated return to Stormont, such as the election of a speaker? You can't elect a first minister and deputy first minister to oversee Northern Ireland unless you have a speaker. And could that happen, for example, before the summer? I think an interesting way to look at read the mood within the DUP is an article that Peter Robinson wrote for the newsletter days ago. He's more influential in the DUP today under Sir Geoffrey Donaldson than he was under Arlene Foster. And he said that the DUP should stay out until there is satisfactory, he didn't describe exactly what he meant, satisfactory delivery on the bill, but make clear that it is going back and that it wants to play a full part in the governments of Northern Ireland. Mm. And so I think it is important to be aware of that, because obviously a lot of people looking at this in the Republic of Ireland and elsewhere will think that unionists are being wreckers about this. And of course, as I said, there are unionists who feel that this is such a disaster. In fact, Peter Robinson himself uses the phrase the disastrous protocol constitutionally, that anything other than its scrapping is unacceptable. Mm. But the debate has clearly moved beyond that to hoping that the government delivers on some of this. And I think that, you know, It is also important to remember how much pressure there has been on the European Union. For example, in Northern Ireland, obviously I edit a unionist newspaper, so we're very aware of what unionists think. There is a feeling that when Irish Americans come in, as Nancy Pelosi of the US Congress did, and Congressman Richie Neal, I think this was in 2019, that they're very uncritically reported, and it's always scolding unionists to go back in. When Congressman Neal came back on his own a matter of weeks ago, he didn't have the sort of uncritical coverage that he had before. And we ended up in a situation where the Alliance Party, which is, you know, pro the protocol, was very anti-Brexit, was asking him to ask the EU to move. So the EU is also under pressure to move. And the legal actions to which we were referring just moments ago, one of them is a restarting of the legal action. Remember that the restarting of the legal action is to get full to head towards what the EU says it hasn't had, a full implementation of the protocol.
Yeah.
And there isn't really a big voice now calling for full implementation of the protocol.
Well,
so there's pressure on both sides and there's movement on both sides.
Let me go back to David on that. David, I know we kind of looked through all of this, understandably, through our own prism and through an Irish prism. Well, what's the sense across the European Union? How much unity is there? Like, to what degree do the Poles and Hungarians and Italians kind of occupy themselves with thoughts of full implementation of the withdrawal agreement?
Well, I doubt if it's, you know, a daily topic of conversation in the trattorias in Italy. I agree. But I think it would be a mistake to underestimate the extent to which people feel that a huge amount of effort went into negotiating the withdrawal agreement, and specifically the Northern Ireland Protocol, you know, which went through many variations and permutations, was finally agreed, you know, painstakingly negotiated line by line, and signed and ratified and hailed by the British government as a major achievement. So I think there is absolutely no appetite to reopen the terms of the protocol. Now, having said that, I agree with Ben that there is a lot of scope for flexibility in how it's actually implemented. And the great frustration felt in Brussels by Mara Šefčovič, the lead negotiator, and the rest of the team, is that if they would the British would just sit down and actually implement what they have promised, and we can discuss how to avoid and mitigate some of the problems which are there and which are real, and nobody denies it. Take the case of medicines, where the European Union actually changed EU legislation in order to avoid that there might be difficulties for the supply of medicines to Northern Ireland. So I think in practical terms, solutions can be found to nearly every problem. But it is, as Ben just said, a question for the DUP. Do they want the whole thing scrapped, or are we simply talking about how to make sure it's implemented in the most efficient and least intrusive way on daily life in Northern Ireland? And that's where there's a space for negotiation. But this legislation, let's be very clear, does not do that. It completely unilaterally rewrites the whole protocol, which is unprecedented in international law, to be very frank.
Ben, would that fly with the DUP, full implementation of the deal already agreed and then tweak?
I do think that there won't be full implementation of the deal, but I think that the European Union is holding on to the legal gains and is very reluctant to relinquish the legal gains. The UK is still saying that it wants a negotiated settlement. One of the other aspects of this is whether or not Boris Johnson actually can deliver the bill. That's one of the things that we're looking at tomorrow with this business that I was referring to earlier of pressure on the DUP from Conservatives, from the government, which we're hearing about from sources, to say what Peter Robinson essentially was calling on the DUP to say, which is that it's keen to get back. So it is a difficult situation. The DUP, of course, lost a very significant number of votes in the recent election to the traditional unionist voice, which is Jim Allister as a politician at the hardline party. And that meant that its overall vote was much lower than Sinn Féin's. If it hadn't lost those votes, its overall vote would have been level with Sinn Féin's. So the DUP's room for manoeuvre is limited. One thing I would say about the DUP, obviously it has a very hardline reputation, and obviously there is an ancestry of hardline politics within the DUP. It was founded by a fundamentalist preacher, Reverend Ian Paisley, of course, famously. But it is also a party like the Conservative Party in London that likes to be in power. It's not enjoying not being in power. So what it's trying to do is, I think, is navigate a way back to power and get as much concessions as it can out of this. But I wouldn't want anyone then to think that it's just going to give up the fight in this, because apart from anything else, it can't. This is pretty serious existential stuff. What is Northern Ireland? What does it mean being in the United Kingdom? What does it mean if there isn't unfettered trade within the nation?
Yeah.
This is, yes, it was agreed. And yes, some unionists talked about the benefits probably more quickly than they should have done. Most unionists would now think it's a very complicated area.
Yeah.
It does raise serious constitutional long-term questions that the DUP and everyone is grappling with.
Listen, Ben, always interesting. We appreciate your time. David, same to you. Ben Lowry is the deputy editor. Sorry, the editor. I demoted you for a moment there, Ben. The editor of the Belfast Newsletter. And David O'Sullivan, former Secretary General at the European Commission and head of the EU's Foreign Service and current Director General of the Institute of International and European Affairs. Lots of people continue to get in touch about housing. Catherine says the councils in the 50s, 60s and 70s employed carpenters, bricklayers, plasterers, tilers, etc. Brilliant workers. And the houses they built are now the most sought after today. Built to last, still standing. My house built in the 90s, falling apart at the seams. Bring back the great workers. The government won't do anything. Chris says housing has been a problem since the late 80s. With all the problems of developers in the 80s, instead of cleaning up, we moved to allowing the developers dictate housing policy. When private industry is allowed to run government policies, nothing good is achieved. 53106 is the text number. Keep those views coming after the break. We're going to be talking about not a shortage of housing, a shortage of 99 flakes.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.